Welcome to the Goals Podcast, the business case for women's sports, where we explore every corner of the women's sports industry from the field to the front office. I'm Caroline Fitzgerald, and I'm here to prove that it's good business to be in the business of women's sports. Today's episode is brought to you by Ally, a change maker in women's sports, steadfast in their commitment to the fight for media equity, because we're all better off with an ally. Our guest today is Phil Thompson, the chief data scientist at Parity and one of the key leaders behind a new piece of research from Parity and SurveyMonkey titled From Moment to Mainstream, What International Consumers Really Think About Women's Sports. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, Phil, I should actually say welcome back to the show because this is your second appearance on the Business Case for Women's Sports. So thank you so much for being here. We always love talking data on this show. So it just makes sense that you would have been on a few times because you were always churning out tremendous data over at Parity. And today's episode is extra special because of the study that I just referenced in the intro. It may be the largest study of women's sports fandom in history. It's a huge deal. You obviously helped lead that effort. So we're going to dig into that for the core of our discussion today. But before we start, we love to hear about the backgrounds of our guests. So Phil, can you give us the overview of your background and career path that has led you to now holding the position of chief data scientist at Parity?
Sure. I started my career actually not in sports at all. I was in finance straight out of college. I was doing kind of like the quintessential finance job on a trading floor. And as I did that for a few years, I realized that although lots of parts of my job were quite interesting, the bit I was super, super interested on was the data piece, and particularly where I could maybe get data that other people didn't have and understand how we could use it. Unfortunately, that wasn't really what they were paying me to do. So after a few years, I left, got a master's in sort of statistics to try and bolster my data skills, and then briefly ended up back in finance, running a sort of small data science team. But I have always been a massive sports nut. Like I have super early memories. I grew up in Hong Kong. I have super early memories of like staying up at ridiculous hours to watch games in the UK and in the US as well. And always wanted to work in sports and do data work in sports. So when the opportunity at Parity came up, it was obviously like a dream come true for me. I also was less interested in maybe doing like performance data stuff in sports and wanted to sort of, I guess, work more in the arena of how can data be used to elevate sports as sort of like, you know, its role in society, you know, really ridiculous, ambitious ideas. But again, why Parity was so interesting to me is because it's women's sports, right? So it's like the perfect trifecta for me of get to work in data, get to work in sports, and then also get to work in a mission that is just like really, really compelling for me. So that's how I ended up at Parity.
Well, it's amazing. And it does feel like you are existing at the intersection of your interests, which is really special. So for our listeners out there that might not be familiar with Parity, can you give us the overview of the organization? What do you guys do?
So our mission is to close the income and opportunity gap in pro sports between women and men athletes. And how we do that is we're a sports marketing sponsorship platform focused on creating highly impactful partnerships between brands and primarily women pro athletes, but just generally women's sports properties. We do a lot of work on social media because it is sort of, in many respects, like the big democratizing force in media. Like everyone can get access to a social media account and build their persona there. So we do a lot of partnerships between brands and athletes on social media, but that's not the only avenue we use. Our goal really is basically, if you think about professional women athletes and their income streams, there's obviously wages or stipends from, you know, like NGBs, like, you know, like the US Olympic Committee or, you know, the governing bodies of sports. There's prize money, but then there's also this giant pocket of other money that comes from sponsorships and endorsements. And that's actually where the biggest disparity is between men and women athletes. And so that's where we focus trying to close the gap. So can we bring sponsorship opportunities to professional women athletes to basically allow them to continue to be professional athletes? A lot of the athletes that we have on our platform, we have over 1,000 athletes signed up with us now. A lot of those athletes have to make real financial decisions on an annual basis about whether they should continue to be professional athletes and do the thing that they're really good at and that we all love them to do because they can't afford to do it. And so we want to bring them as many opportunities as we can to increase their income, to allow them to be professional athletes for as long as they want to, and to you know, not just survive, but really thrive financially. So that's what we do. We try to close that income gap between men and women professional athletes.
Well, I'm a big fan of parity in the mission and everything you guys have done since launching in 2020. It's just been incredible. And it makes a lot of sense that an organization like Parity would have someone like you on the team, the chief data scientist, that is really gathering the numbers and the insights that make the business case for why it's great business to invest in women athletes. So that takes me right into the survey, the research that I referenced at the top of the show. Your team recently partnered with SurveyMonkey to release a first of its kind report titled From Moment to Mainstream, What International Consumers Really Think About Women's Sports. So Phil, I'd love to start today with the why behind this. Why did you guys decide to do this research, and who is this research for?
Sure. We had a couple of motivations. So for the why, I think a big motivator was let's get a current view of women's sports fandom. There's been a lot of growth over the last few years, and we see that reflected in viewership numbers that people are reporting, and we see that just reflected in media attention and social media attention. But we really wanted to get some sort of cross-cutting data to understand who's watching women's sports, you know, how much are they watching, how many people are watching, what do they think about women's sports, how does it sort of fit into, you know, their values. And then also to take an international perspective. I think that it's something that we've seen has not been done fairly often, and understandably so. It's quite difficult to reach an international audience. And so, you know, partnering with SurveyMonkey, we had access to that. And so we wanted to take advantage of that, to understand if this is a movement that is international, is it in some places and not other places? Are there differing views? And, you know, I guess superficially that's interesting, but then also trying to understand if there are differences, what's driving them and what can we learn from those differences? And maybe what can we apply to how we think about growing women's sports to really maximize potential. Another motivation was, I think if you listen everywhere to the noise about women's sports, you could get the impression that it's controversial, right? That there are some vehement supporters of women's sports, but there are also some vehement detractors. And at least from my perspective, it was very hard to gauge if these voices were proportionately sized. Is this actually a controversial issue? Supporting women's sports, does that sort of put you in an area where you might come in conflict with a large group of people? And so we wanted to really test that. Like, what do people really think about women's sports and athletes as well? We'll talk about it more later, but spoiler alert, it's not controversial at all. Like, people broadly support women's sports and broadly watch women's sports. It's not controversial. There's sort of a disproportionate amount of attention given to the detractors. But anyway, we'll get into that. And then in terms of the who, I think the research is for anyone who cares about women's sports. Like, there's something in here that I think would be of interest to anyone who watches or maybe doesn't watch, but has an open-minded interest to women's sports. But also, given what we do, we wanted to provide as much data and sort of supporting data for brands who either are interested in investing in women's sports, are already investing in women's sports, or maybe haven't even considered investing in women's sports, give them some data to sort of incentivize increased interest, like to sort of test the hypothesis that there is a lot of value to be gained by investing in women's sports. Spoiler alert, there is. But really provide them with maybe the sort of catalyst to take action. Or for people who are already supporters and trying to make the case, arm them with data so that they can sort of bring people along for the ride. So in terms of who, I think probably everybody, but really wanted to focus on on this podcast, let's make the case for investing in women's sports. Like, the business of women's sports is a place you want to be.
100%. So I'd love to hear, you're a data scientist. There's obviously a methodology behind this. So how did this work? How did you and SurveyMonkey conduct this research?
Yeah. I thought this was so cool, and we were so lucky to work with SurveyMonkey on this one. I think one of the challenges in conducting this type of survey data is trying to get as unbiased a sample as you can. And if you think about the ways that you can reach people to answer surveys, you know, I would typically think of, oh, let's put it on our social accounts, let's put it on our website, let's, you know, ask our friends to post it and see what happens. And we've done that in the past. The challenge with that is you sort of target certain types of fandom or certain types of people, and then you get results back and they sort of just confirm your sample, right? So a tangible example of that is we put a little link on our social media account, say fill out our survey. And then one of the questions we ask is, you know, do you follow accounts on social media? And lo and behold, 100% of people do, because that's how they found it. So getting out of that paradigm can be very tricky. Enter SurveyMonkey. So we partnered with them, and I think that they provided many, many, I guess, indispensable tools for us. But two things they really helped on was, one, they're a survey company and they have a very, very good research team. And so we had a lot of questions we wanted to ask, some things we wanted to sort of test the waters on, and they really helped us hone the questions and ask them in a way such that we could ensure that we weren't, you know, leading people to answer in certain ways. We were asking questions that really faithfully got answers. And then two, in terms of fielding the survey, they basically gave us access to users on SurveyMonkey to take the survey. And so effectively what it looks like is if you take a survey on SurveyMonkey platform, at the end of the survey, it might prompt you to take another survey. And so our survey appeared on that end screen. And so we were able, one, to access international samples, so we could get users in countries that SurveyMonkey operates, which is a lot of countries. And two, you know, no sample is ever completely unbiased unless you're by some miracle you randomly managed to get at people. But to get us really close to that, right? Because we had really good distribution across age, sex. We had good distribution across income, education levels. They also helped us use, not to get into too much of the boring nitty gritty of survey statistics, but to use like things like census data to reweight our answers to make sure that what we were reporting was pretty representative of populations at large. And so, you know, what we ended up with was, you know, over 14,000 people across 7 countries, over 5,000 people in the US alone. And some statistics we feel are pretty representative of what those populations at large think about women's sports.
It's incredible. And I think that's really important for people to understand, is that this survey was not just a survey of women's sports fans talking about how much they love women's sports. This was a survey of general consumers that you guys were gauging their feelings in general around women's sports. So I think the fact that you did that and that you had 14,000 people from across the globe talk about this, I mean, it's pretty powerful stuff that you guys were able to do this and that you did do this.
Yeah. And to be honest, when we first embarked on this journey, and SurveyMonkey proposed this way of collecting data, I'm in sort of natural skeptic, but I said to them, oh, we're not going to be able to get enough people who watch women's sports by doing that. We need to target women's sports fans. And they said, no, we'll be able to do it. We just, let's just see how it goes. And lo and behold, we got, a massive sample of people who we deem as women's sports fans. But yeah, I think the really cool thing is, one, we were able to access, people we deem as women's sports fans. But then two, we were also able just to understand, even for people who don't watch women's sports, like, what do they think about athletes? What do they think about women's sports? What do they think about the Olympics? What do they think about equality? And that stuff we wouldn't have been able to do if we were just targeting women's sports fans. So it was really, in the end, just like a fantastic way to have fielded the survey, I think.
Well, I'd love to hear what they do think. So that seems like a perfect point for us to get into the key findings and the takeaways from this research. So what are the big things that you found? What are the stats, the data, the insights that you think are worth noting?
Broadly speaking, I think the findings sort of fall into three buckets. One is just who watches, how much they watch, why they watch was a big segment of the findings. Two was, what do people think about women's sports? What do they think about parity in women's sports or disparity in women's sports, and athletes generally? And then three, sort of, what is the opportunity for brands investing in women's sports? And how do you think about, if you partner with a woman athlete, what that might mean for your, investment on your dollars. So just starting with the viewership, averaging across the 7 countries where we fielded, which were, I'm going to try and remember off the top of my head. So it was the US and Canada, UK, France, Germany, Spain, and Australia were the 7 countries where we fielded. If you average across those countries, about 70% of people reported watching women's sports at least a few times a year. And it's also quite consistent across the countries. One of the things, as we were fielding the survey, one of my colleagues here sort of rightly so, skeptically pointed out that it was March. And so she said, well, it's March Madness. You're going to get like a ridiculous, you know, answer because you know, everyone's watching women's sports now, or at least aware of it now because, you know, we're in the throes of March Madness. But, you know, outside the US, people don't really care about March Madness. And there was still around 70% of viewership across those countries. So I think two things were surprising there. One is just how prevalent women's sports is and how many people do watch it at least a few times a year. And then two, how consistent it was across the country. So it wasn't like this was maybe, you know, there's certainly differences, probably around 10% from the highest to lowest, but this wasn't somewhere, something where, you know, viewership was very high in the UK, but very low, you know, maybe somewhere else. Pretty universally, people watch women's sports. It's only about 10 to 15% lower than the proportion of people who report watching men's sports at least a few times a year. So again, I came into this thinking there's going to be a big gap between sort of frequency of watching men's sports and women's sports. At least when you look at people who just watch occasionally, the numbers are pretty close. And then the second thing, again, which was quite surprising to me, is that it's not women watching women's sports. Actually, if you dig into the data, men watch at a slightly higher rate than women. So it really is everybody watching women's sports. It's not something just, you know, I think coming into this, I had sort of a preconceived notion that, you know, women's sports fans were young, tech-savvy women, and that was sort of like the niche audience. At least in terms of people who watch occasionally, that's not the case. Everybody watches occasionally.
Phil, there was one other thing that really struck me when reading the report around who's watching women's sports is that 25 to 33% of fans reported that they're watching more women's sports this year than compared to last year. And that 54% of all women's sports fans have begun tuning in to women's sports only in the last 3 years. So to me, that just like screamed growth opportunity, look how we're growing and scaling so quickly. So I found that to be really interesting as well.
Yeah. I think so. Yes, a lot of people are watching women's sports already, and we've seen this really big growth over the last few years. The good news is it's not saturated, though. So, like, growth has happened, which is great, but there's still plenty of room to grow, not just in, you know, it's 70%, not 100%, but if you think about how much people watch or how frequently people watch, there is still a gap between men's and women's sports in terms of, like, frequency and actually quantity, and there's plenty of room to grow, and I think the survey gave us clues as to why the growth has happened and also clues as to why the growth will continue to happen. And I think just, you know, to cover off on a few stats, you mentioned, you know, roughly half of people started watching in the last 3 years. In Spain and the UK, that is 75 and 60% respectively. I'm reading these numbers because I don't want to get it wrong. So 75% of people in Spain started watching in the last 3 years and 60% in the UK. And although I didn't ask this question directly, if you are a soccer fan, you'd know that some pretty big things happened last year in women's soccer in those two countries. And so there's this sort of like, you know, we've long suspected that exposure drives interest, drives growth. There is, you know, evidence that that might be the case. Also, the sort of people who report watching more is highest in the UK and Australia. And again, if you're a women's soccer fan, you might think that it could be a connection there. Australia hosted the World Cup and the UK, of course, made the final. So There is evidence that you know, exposure is driving interest. People, about a third of people said that they're watching more because there's increased media coverage or they can find it more easily. And then the other big, I think, you know, indicators that there is just room to grow is a lot of young people report starting to watch fairly frequently, and they also report social media as kind of like the big driver of that. And so that infrastructure is in place, right? We are primed to get more people, more young people who already use social media to watch more women's sports. They also want to watch it with other people. So over half of the respondents said they would watch more if they could watch it with other people. And again, about half said they find via channel surfing. So, you know, like the sports bra, you know, the women's sports bar out in Portland, hopefully the first of many. I know there are some others cropping up, but hopefully this is a trend. As those venues start growing and appearing all over the place and people have the opportunity to watch together, we're just going to see more growth. So, you know, lots of people watching, lots of signs that it has grown in the last few years, but lots of indicators that there is just like room to grow and the infrastructure is primed to help us grow. Like we are increasing the ways in which people can access women's sports, and access and exposure equals growth. So for me, you know, looking at the data, I was just so like thrilled. It's just like such an optimistic view, I think, on women's sports. Like lots of people are watching. The growth is high, growth rate is high, but we're certainly not tapped out. Like it is just going to keep growing. And I think that came out pretty strongly in the data.
It certainly did. And it's nice to have the data to back up the statement that if you make women's sports accessible, more people will watch. And that's exactly what you proved here with that part of the research. But your research wasn't just limited to who is watching women's sports and why are they watching women's sports. You also dug into consumer behavior and how consumer behavior is impacted by women athletes and women's sports. So what are some of the key findings that your team took away from that portion of the survey?
Yeah, so I'd say there's sort of two pieces to that. One is some questions around how people view athletes and then specifically about how they view athletes in terms of brand partnerships. So general population at large, around 90% of people view women athletes as positive role models. And around 90% of people think that it's important for girls to play sports growing up. So there is this really consistent view that women's sports is important and that women athletes are important, and positive members of society. Sidebar, when I looked at these results with my counterpart at SurveyMonkey, who's a survey research expert, she said to me, like, 90% is unheard of. Like, you never ask general population a question and 90% of people agree on the answer. Like, that is an unbelievably sort of assertive answer. So, 90% of people think that women athletes play a positive role in society. People also express sort of like a high level of connection to women athletes. It's a big motivator for why people watch sport and a high level of trust. So, around 57% of people said that when a woman athlete promotes a product, they trust that she really believes in it, right? Like, so they trust that the promotion is driven from a belief in that product. If you contrast that to male athletes, it's around 50%. So there really is this lift. And then we sort of dug into questions around, how do you view women athletes as influencers? How do you view brands that, work with women athletes? There we really saw some strong impact. So we asked people, are you more likely to buy a product when it's promoted by a woman athlete, another type of influencer, or do you not really care? And for fans of women's sports, which again is not a niche audience, it's 70% of our respondents, for fans of women's sports, they are 2.8 times more likely to buy when a woman athlete is promoting than when another type of influencer is promoting. That's pretty big, right? That's like a pretty big difference. Around a third of fans of women's sports say that they're more likely to buy when a brand supports women's sports or women athletes than when they don't. So you really do see this effect where people are moved by women athletes being product spokespeople or product promoters for brands. And they're really moved by brands being involved in women's sports. 50% of people say that brands are not investing enough in women's sports. So there's this sort of like perfect confluence of people want brands to be investing in women's sports. And when they do invest in women's sports, they are actually moved by their partnerships with women athletes. And I think, from a brand's perspective, I think, that's not enough to get you running to work with women athletes. It should be enough to get you to at least think about it. And if it fits in with how, you think about your product promotion, your brand strategy.
Absolutely. If the goal is to connect with consumers so that they ultimately spend with you or purchase your product, it would just make sense that you would be doing something that they believe in and that they think that you should do. And your data shows that fans, they're not too fond of the gender gaps that exist in sports. And they think that there needs to be a lot more opportunity for women athletes and that brands need to be investing a lot more in women's sports.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you do, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I think it's around 2/3 of people said that they believe that, professional men athletes have a greater number of opportunities than women athletes. So people really do see that disparity and they want brands investing. And so there's this like really consistent story of, I want this fixed. I want brands to be involved. And I like it when they work with athletes, it affects the way I think about those brands, which I think is just a really good story for brands thinking about getting involved.
100%. And again, I feel like I can't say this enough. This is not just a pool of dedicated women's sports fans. These are general consumers from across the globe. So this is just what people are saying. So just incredible work. And Phil, last time you came on this podcast, you brought something up that I thought was really interesting. You talked about the missing data problem in women's sports. And yes. So not only were you talking the talk, you're walking the walk to close the data gap that exists here. So can you talk about what the missing data problem is and how this report is helping to solve that problem?
Yeah, so I think, to be honest, the missing data problem is very broad. There just isn't enough data about women's sports and women's sports fandom. For me, one of my particular, I guess, pet peeves within that is that, you know, intuitively, it makes sense to assess an investment in sports by kind of the number of people you might reach. So the size of the fandom. And traditionally, how do you measure the size of the fandom? You look at how many people watch the sport, like you just look at viewership. Again, this all tracks logically, except that people can only watch things when they are broadcast and available. And you know, you can't measure the size of a fandom if you're not, you know, allowing them to watch the thing that you're trying to measure. And so this report doesn't solve that problem, right? We're not sort of like unlocking that problem, but it does give us clues as to the prevalence of that problem and other ways to maybe think about it. And so one is like, you know, all these data points around people watch when there is increased media coverage, people watch when things are available, people watch when they find it channel surfing, they watch when they can watch with friends and it's available. So really sort of, I guess, reiterating the notion that, you know, first of all, exposure drives viewership. And if things are available, people will watch them. So that's one piece of it. And then the second is kind of this like untapped potential fandom, which again, I sort of, you know, view as a missing data problem. So specifically, if you sort of like, if you allowed someone to be a fan, would they be a fan? So like, if you expose them to women's sports, would they then, you know, convert to being a fan? And how big is that pool of people? And again, I think, you know, we certainly didn't answer that question, you know, completely with the survey. But again, I think we uncovered little pieces that support that story. So, you know, people are watching more. People are reporting, starting to watch in recent years. People are reporting, like getting access via social media. And so there is this notion that there is a mechanism to tap into this new fandom and that this new fandom still exists. So although, again, I say, you know, 70% of people, the headline number is most people watch women's sports. But if you click down, like how often do they watch? How much do they watch? That there's still tons of room to grow there. And so, you know, the size of the untapped market is still big and we have a good sense of how to now tap into it. You need to like give people exposure to it. And that will start to unlock, I think, the missing data problem. So we certainly haven't solved it, but I think we've sort of corroborated, at least loosely, our suspicion that there are still plenty of people who would be fans if they could be fans. And there's still plenty of potential to grow. And that if you narrowly think about measuring the value of a sports property or an athlete by how many people watch them on TV, you're missing it, right? That's not it. That's you're missing so many aspects of it. You know, people access people via social media. And even athletes, you know, we didn't ask this in the survey, but, you know, the sort of like recognition of athletes' names and faces is so high that even in general population, like if you have an athlete promoting a product, that means something. Things like that sort of like really point to, if you're only narrowly thinking about measuring the impact of investment in sports by, you know, how many viewers you'll get if you invest in sport, you're probably missing a lot of the impact you could be accessing.
Phil, this is just amazing stuff. I could listen to you talk about this all day long. I'm just so grateful to you and the team at Parenting, the team at SurveyMonkey for doing this, because I think the biggest thing for me that you have debunked here is that old antiquated saying that no one cares about women's sports. Yep. That is just simply not true anymore. No one can say that anymore. It just doesn't exist. So that there's obviously so much great data here. We could talk about this all day long. I love geeking out about the numbers, but yep, we do need to come to the end of our show here. So I have one more question for you before we get to our closing questions, which I know you're familiar sure with, but I'm going to ask them to you again when we get to the end, because I want to hear if they've changed at all since you've now conducted this new research. But before we get there, I guess my last question for you is there anything from all of this research that really now gives you hope for the future of women's sports? I think there's a lot here for me personally, but for you? Is there like one nugget of information that you're like, wow, this is significant. This gives me a lot of hope for the future.
Yeah. I'm going to cheat and go with two. I'm sorry. I think there's a lot. Basically, most of the survey is the answer. But I think two things, you know, we've talked about both of them briefly, but I'll highlight again. One is just the size of the new fans bucket, like the number of people who've started watching recently or starting to watch more gives me massive hope because, you know, I'm a data person, so it pains me to say this without evidence, but it seems like that's probably correlated with the amount of, you know, broadcast exposure it's getting. So gives me massive hope for growth. And the other one is just the people's desire to support women's sports, both general population, but also fans. You know, one of the biggest motivators to watch women's sports is to support women. And so again, you know, you can get really bogged down with a lot of the negativity around women's sports. If you listen to all that's out there, there wasn't any negativity here. It was like almost universally positivity around women's sports. And I think that's just like such a positive position to be in. And, you know, where else can it go from here other than up, right? It's going to keep getting better if that's the foundation that we're sitting on.
Absolutely. Phil, that's a good spot for us to take a quick break to hear a message from our sponsor, and then we'll be back to close out our conversation.
As you may know, the goal of this podcast is to show brands, networks, and people in general that it's good business to invest in women's sports. Our sponsor, Ally, shares this belief and knows firsthand the power of investing in women's sports. That's why, along with being sponsors of the National Women's Soccer League, the Atlantic Coast Conference, and the United States Golf Association, they were the first brand to commit to equal media spend in women's and men's sports because they believe brands have the power to solve media disparity and positively affect the financial trajectory of people's lives. So jump in and be part of the change. To learn more about Ally, go to ally.com because we're all better off with an ally.
All right, we are back and I just have three more quick questions for you. Number one, if you could wave a magic wand and create equity in one aspect of sports right now, what would it be?
I remember you asked me this last time and I think I said access last time. So I won't say access again. I mean, it's probably obvious, but I think I'll say investment this time. I think that, you know, if you're someone who pays attention to women's sports and you pay attention to where there's been, you know, financial investment and the impact of that, it's just so clear that it really makes a massive difference. Like the WNBA is a great example, you know, sort of the injection of new ownership and new dollars and, you know, how that's driven, you know, the increase of in fans and like in-person fans and like, the teams playing in you know, the arenas they should have always been playing in, but now are playing in them. It's made a massive difference. And, you know, if you're someone who's watched for a while, the resulting sort of increase in quality of play, because people aren't having to juggle being a, you know, professional basketball player with a million other financial responsibilities and being able to dedicate to their craft. That difference is just, for a fan, has been so fun, right? It's now, you know, people are sort of like reaching their full potential as professional athletes because they're being allowed to. So I think just financial investment in women's sports from every possible altitude, I think is the place I would love to see, you know, equity or at least the gap closing.
Great answer. Couldn't agree with that more. Phil, before we get to our final question, is there anything that you'd like to plug or anything additional you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Sure. I mean, well, first of all, read the report. I think that's my biggest plug. Even if you're someone who's, you know, you're not necessarily a brand, you're just someone who has an interest in women's sports, I think you'll find something in there that is attention grabbing. The other one, which is always my plug, is just watch women's sports. There's so much like available at the moment. If you're willing to look a little bit, you can find tons. Even if you're not willing to look, it's still available. It's sort of comes into your homes now. But it's so, so good. And I will watch anything. I make my kids every morning, we like turn on some channel and watch some different sport in the morning. And I'm always finding new stuff. I got into watching sport climbing recently because it's Olympic qualifiers. It's so good. It's so good. And what, you know, professional athletes and professional women athletes are able to do is just, it's out of this world. So just watch women's sports. You'll love it. Watch it.
You will just watch it. You'll be with all these survey respondents that also share that they love watching women's sports. Phil, last question for you. And you know, this question, we always close with it here on the podcast. Can you summarize in a few sentences why you think it's good business to invest in women's sports?
Yeah. So you can reach a lot of people. Investing in women's sports helps you reach a really broad and frankly diverse audience and also align with what they want. People want brands investing in women's sports. So you have this wonderful opportunity to reach a large group of people. A lot of people watch women's sports, and to do something that they are really wanting you to do, which is invest in women's sports. And then if that's not enough, on top of that, people are affected by your investment. When they see you invested in women's sports, they tend to have a more positive view of the brand. They tend to be better influenced by women athletes than other influencers. So it's this wonderful opportunity to sit at the confluence of these things where you can reach a lot of people. You can do a thing that they want you to do. And then on top of that, you can actually have an impactful investment. Where else can you do all those three things? So I just think, you know, the time is now. It was probably yesterday, but if it's not yesterday, it's now to get into women's sports.
It is such a win-win-win. I couldn't agree more with everything that you just said. Phil, thank you so much for coming back on the show. Thank you for conducting this research. It is game-changing. It's so good. I have read the report probably 4 times now. So thank you so much for all you do. Please keep up the amazing work, and we'll make sure we link to the full report so everybody can dig into the details. And again, just thanks for all that you do on behalf of women athletes.
Well, thanks for having me on again. It's always fun to chat, and appreciate being back on the pod.
Thank you for listening to the Goals Podcast, the business case for women's sports presented by Ally, a changemaker in women's sports steadfast in their commitment to the fight for media equity, because we're all better off with an ally. To learn more about Goals and our work to bring more brand investment into women's sports, be sure to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram, or visit our website at goals-sports.com. And remember, it's simply good business to be in the business of women's sports.